people just don't discuss it. So it's just like, keep quiet and get on with it. And actually people are struggling. So it's important to get it out there. There's all random symptoms that people don't sort of talk about. Anxiety of driving is a big thing. Don't want to drive at night. Dry eyes, itchy scalp.
God, it's never ending, this list.
There's loads of it. Brain fog.
Our podcast claims the Dangerous Women mantle one incredible dangerous woman at a time. The Dangerous Women Collective is a community of professional women where achievement is celebrated, mutual support is unquestioned, and women's contribution to economic, social, and technical progress is championed. The Dangerous Women Collective podcast is the public voice of our community. It's a forum to hold in-depth conversations with brilliant women who have strong stories to share about how they have navigated the world of work and life and what we can do to lift one another up. And Dangerous Women know, as well as anyone, that we live in an increasingly fractured and targeted world, and how important it is to protect ourselves on and offline. That's why we are honoured to announce ESET as our new sponsor. As one of the world's leading cybersecurity brands and Europe's top vendor, trusted by over 500,000 businesses worldwide, we know we're in safe hands. We will be hearing more from ESET as the series progresses. And of course, their fabulously dangerous UK head of marketing, Jules Berriff, appeared on Series 2. In Series 3, we will continue to explore the careers and stories of eight of the most dangerous women around. From menopause advisors to agency founders, women sharing their stories of resurgence after redundancy, and leaders of world-famous businesses. Their stories shed light on winning in today's world, with both zest and style, often in extraordinarily complicated circumstances. Their lead-by-example fearlessness is both inclusive and empowering. Dangerous women share their tales of derring do to inspire and engage everyone who recognises the power of zig versus zag. We dare you to listen. Over the course of recording this podcast, the dreaded M word has raised its head on more than one occasion. Is the menopause one of the final taboos in the workplace, we wonder? Certainly, women of a certain age are managing a shift in their well-being as they enter into what could be some of the most experienced or powerful years of their career. But just as many of us are stepping into our stride, we are beset by anxiety, brain fog, shifting sleep patterns, let alone the medical symptoms from night sweats to urinary tract infections. Men, or at least most men, much as they try, cannot really understand what the menopause is all about, and it isn't just on the radar of our younger colleagues. And I ask myself, we all ask ourselves, is that fair? I don't think we're asking for any special treatment per se, but we are asking for more understanding. In the same way we've come on leaps and bounds when it comes to pregnancy at work and maternity and paternity leave, is it time for an M-word revolution? Today, I'm delighted to introduce you to someone who can shed light on many of our questions and all about our well-being in the workplace. Fiona Parra-Palmer is a specialist public health nurse and has completed her menopause care profession certificate with the Faculty of Sexual and Reproductive Healthcare. As well as running her own private menopause clinic called Second Spring, Fiona, or Fee, also works at the Royal Devon University Trust for Occupational Health, where she is the Trust's menopause nurse advisor for NHS staff. Which is all to say, she really knows her stuff. And, as I have known her for some time, I can tell you that she passionately advocates for women to access all they need to help them weather their menopause as easily as they can. That could be medical interventions, alternative therapies, or better understanding of our own bodies. But that is enough of the upfront from me. Let's hear more from our brilliantly dangerous expert. So, Fee, I've known you a really long time, and as long as I've known you, you've been interested in well-being, whether it's on the medical side or perhaps even a more alternative side. How's your career progressed, and how have you ended up to where you are today?
Okay, so I trained as a nurse at St Mary's at Paddington, and then worked again as a nurse for many years, and trained to be a midwife as well, and then decided that I had three children and completely came out of nursing for a few years, where I focused on more of the beauty side, and then decided to go back to do nursing because it kept calling me back, really. So I did my back to nursing course.
And how old were you when you did that, Fee?
34.
Oh, no, 34? quite young.
No, a bit older actually, 36.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
still
did that, and then worked in the vaccination centre where I went all around the schools to do vaccinations for teenagers, and then decided to go into occupational health where I'm working now, and I'd ended up doing a public health degree, and that's when I became interested in sort of perimenopause and menopause. It's probably my age. You know, yeah. I was a midwife. That was interesting. Whereas then I was sort of getting to the age where I was more interested in menopause things. So that's where I've sort of come from.
So, I mean, I know because I've witnessed it many times. You do speak very passionately about the menopause. What do you think interests you so much about that? Why are you so passionate about it? Like, you are advocate for making sure we find everything, all the treatment we should do.
Yeah, well, I just think it's so important to look after our lovely women and protect them as they're getting older. And it's, lots of people don't have the knowledge about it. So it's all very simple, really, at the end of the day, what we can do. And,
yeah.
And I think it's overcomplicated, maybe.
And do you think people talk about it enough?
People are more talking about it, definitely. But I think some people think it's being talked about too much.
Well, I think only if you're 50 plus women, right? But
yeah,
are men talking about it? Not in any productive way, particularly.
But they are definitely talking about it.
Oh, great.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I get people talking about it.
No, I know you do. I know you do. That's what we're going to do now. So, as this is an M-word special, we're going to run it a little bit differently, and we're going to talk about some of the issues that you come up or hear about the menopause. But also, this is first and foremost, obviously, a Dangerous Women podcast. And I ask all my women if they consider themselves to be dangerous, or what does dangerous mean to them? And I wondered if you'd had a chance to think about what does dangerous mean?
Well, I think maybe because of my sort of knowledge base that I've got, I can sort of help people become more confident and provide support and education for them in order to help them. So that's why I feel like I've gained the experience and I've got the wherewithal to do that, to help people.
Yeah, when I look at you, and you know, full disclosure, Fee and I are close friends as well, so we you know, we hang out a lot. But when I, so I'm lucky that she said yes to do this, but when I look at you, I see you, you fill yourself with knowledge so that you can empower other women to have knowledge as well. And I think that's such a, and you do it in a fabulously Fiona Pryor Palmer, relaxed, unjudgmental, unstressful way. But I think what I always take away from you is you want people to get the interventions, whatever they may be, to manage the symptoms better and to prepare them for this, I'm going to say second stage, but it's probably the third stage of our life a bit more.
Yeah. But also it's not to make anyone feel that that's what they have to do.
No.
Either. It's not the law. I say to people, it's not the law. You don't have to have, you know, but it's just to help people through if they want any help.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I've tried to interview women of all ages, but because I think I am where I am, nearly 55, you know, they tend to be in the 40 to 50 bracket. And we talk a lot about being dangerous, and we talk about what that means, and often it's women who zig when others zag. You know, it's just being maybe a bit unafraid of life and trying to do things differently and fearlessly. And I think some of the symptoms of menopause can be counterproductive to those feelings of super strength and superpower. And I wonder what you think about that. Do you think it's harder? Just as we're stepping into our stride, we get blindsided by night sweats, for God's sake.
Yeah, and also low confidence, imposter syndrome, you know, anxiety.
I mean, anxiety is the killer.
Anxiety is awful. And then you've got all different things like heart palpitations, you know, urine infections. You know, there's all sorts going on that is going to affect your ability to work properly and to feel good about yourself, especially at the age when maybe you're also looking after elderly relatives. You've got children who are maybe going through exams.
By the way, both of us have children going through exams right now, so we are riding a wave.
We're riding a wave. You can be like the sandwich generation, where it's everything's all at once, and it all slightly revolves about the woman in the house or whoever as well, sort of who runs the, quite often runs the show.
Yeah. So do you think it's possible to be menopausal and dangerous at the same time?
Yes, because I think if you look after yourself properly, I think you have the power to actually not give a
beep about it.
About things so much as you used to maybe 20 years ago.
More grist to be able to, to be able to deal with it. I think our bodies are, and you're going to tell me this is, I'm being an idiot, but our bodies are like amazing things. So when you have a baby, and again, not everybody has to have babies, it's a choice, but I've had two, you've had three. That first one in particular, like, okay, crap, I'm pregnant and this thing has got to come out of me again, and that is pretty yuck. And then you get to the last 4 weeks or 3 weeks of it or whatever it is, and you're just like, get this thing out of me. And your body, mentally, you're just prepared. And in many ways, menopause is similar. Like, yes, there are symptoms that you need to treat or deal with that are different, but actually you're right. We've traversed a lot of our lives by this point. So actually there is a don't give a hooly about things.
And we've got so much knowledge and we've got so much experience, and we've seen so much that actually it's...
We can weather it.
Yeah,
I agree. I am a menopausal woman, and I have been in employment. I'm luckily starting my own business at the moment, so I can do whatever I want. I can be as grumpily menopausal as I want whenever I want. But, you know, it's difficult sometimes when you're at work. And I wondered how much you feel workplaces are ready for menopausal women.
Yeah, I think workplaces, certainly where I'm working in the NHS, we're quite on it, really. We've got a brilliant menopause policy, and we've signed up to the Menopause at Work Pledge. And I do a lot of talking about it, really, to get women supported in the workplace.
So you're in the NHS. I'm going to be a bit pushy now. So yeah, but you would hope that the NHS would be able, you know what to do. No, yes. Yeah, but you'd hope. But so I have never heard of those two things that you've just talked about. So menopause in the workplace.
Well, it's a menopause in the workplace. We've got the menopause policy, which is all
a to-do list for any HR departments listening to this. Should that be on everybody's tick list?
It absolutely should be.
Yeah.
Yes. The HR department sorted that one out.
So tell me, can you explain what a menopause policy is, line?
It just sort of tells you what to do, how to talk to women as managers, any adjustments that are required.
So the equivalent of a breastfeeding room?
Yeah, or just turn up late to work sometimes if you had a really rubbish night's sleep.
Yep.
Able to work from home, have a fan in your office. I mean, all this sort of, you know.
Environmental stuff, yeah.
Come and see, they'll prefer to come and see me at my menopause clinic that I run for NHS staff, so they come and see me and I can advise on things as well and talk to our manager.
And through your private practice, which I know is separate from the NHS, it's a different thing, but there's no reason that workplaces couldn't sign up to people, you or people like you, to give that as access to this sort of a benefit to staff.
Yeah, they could do. Yeah.
I think I'd like to see that more because I think you can manage it at home. Well, that's even difficult. But in the workplace, you have to mask a lot, I think.
You have to mask, you know, especially in the NHS, there's 75% of the workforce are women.
Yes.
And a lot of them are 40 plus. The retention of staff is getting depleted because lots of women can't cope with the hours, or they're so anxious, or they're brain fog, they're not remembering things. They've got imposter syndrome, all sorts going on.
Yeah.
Then they want to do their hours, and they're the ones that have so much knowledge and experience that they're the ones that are leaving the workplace.
Interestingly, this is so interesting because I talked with a lady a couple of weeks ago who's on this series, a fabulous lady called Rochelle Peterson, and I had her on because she was made redundant about a year ago, and I've recently been made redundant as well, happily, because I'm getting to start my own thing, which is amazing. That flip side of it, and I wonder if they're conjoined, we're not going to be able to work that out, but she said she hears of, so it's anecdotal, but so many women of 50 plus are being made redundant at the moment.
Yes.
Surprise, surprise, they're menopausal women, often.
Yeah.
And one of the things she said is, where does all that talent go? Where does all that knowledge go? And it's now out in the ether, you know, employers are missing a trick on leeching this knowledge at the edges of them.
These lovely women still in the workplace.
Yes.
You know, they're amazing. That's why we've got to get more awareness and understanding and to normalise them. Menopause as well, and perimenopause, you know, we all, if we're lucky enough to go through it, it's you know, it's as normalised as puberty and pregnancy.
100%. And I wish men got some of this crap. I know.
Yeah, we want. And it's also making it visible, really, to make it visible in the workplace, as I said, having people talk about it, the policies in place, talks, you know, clinics, normalising.
I think there's a big education gap, and it's obviously not amongst, there's an education gap amongst 50 plus perimenopausal and menopausal women who maybe don't want to know about it or don't know they can know about it or a lot of those things. But actually, I think as important is educating the men and the younger colleagues around us that this is a real thing and it's going to happen to 50% of us.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to deal with it. Do you think there's an education gap? Is that a problem?
Yes, there probably is. I mean, I'm only sort of going with the NHS because we do have a sort of assessment we can all do about menopause at the workplace, that anyone can do it online.
Is it voluntary?
It's voluntary at the moment, but it's really good.
Yeah.
And lots of male managers get talked about it as well when they start their new job, to because obviously lots of them will be female, to be able to talk to how to go about coping with looking after perimenopausal and menopausal staff.
So we need to be a bit more NHS in our policies at work.
It's good. It's good. Yeah. Yeah.
How difficult do you think it is for women to admit that they are struggling with menopause symptoms, particularly at work?
It can be quite difficult, yeah. But it's trying to talk to other colleagues and be open and honest if you can. But obviously it's very difficult. Some people are quite private and they don't want people to know that, you know, if they're bleeding heavily and they need to have time off work, you know, they don't want anyone to know that. So it's trying to get the support in place that they're not forgotten about, really, I think.
I agree. Some women don't want to admit they're that age.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's such a personal thing, unfortunately, sexual health, isn't it?
And everyone's individual. They all think about it in different ways. So you've got to sort of be respectful of that.
100%. And I think if we can now talk about, you know, there's been such steps forward in mental health talk and well-being at work and neurodiversity at work. Hooray. Thank goodness, because it makes just a better workplace for everybody. I think you know, sometimes I feel people think menopause is something that you can just get over. That is particularly if, you know, you work in a very male-dominated environment or with lots of younger people, and that's just not the case. So I think this sort of not enforced, but, you know, giving people access to much more information is crucial.
Places like people come go into big companies and talk about menopause as well. It's definitely becoming more common.
Do you see a lot of women in your NHS practice? Do you?
Busy, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
And how long has that been running?
Over a year, 2 years probably. And so I do a clinic once a week and then send them the letter, and then they'll go and discuss with their GPs what they need to do. And then I'll do talks and things for staff as well.
Brilliant. So, and are they well attended?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't done many. It's all new, and I've got, you know, I'm doing a talk tomorrow afternoon just for our staff, actually, to get them updated about what's going on in the NHS and things to advise.
So what I'm hearing, it's all quite new territory, this stuff, though, isn't it?
Yes.
Which is weird in a lot of ways, that it's taken so long for businesses and workplaces to wake up to the fact that this is something we need to discuss.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? Do you think women have kept it hidden?
I think people just don't discuss it. So it's just like, keep quiet and get on with it. And actually people are struggling. So it's important to get it out there.
I think that's why I wanted this episode, because like I said, it does seem to be a taboo. There are other workplace taboos, of course. The more you talk about it, the more normalised it becomes, the more people will realise what to do and not to do. And exactly. And women also with menopausal symptoms, or perimenopausal symptoms, also feel more comfortable about explaining why they can't be in or out of work.
And lots of women come to see me who might have been put on antidepressants, but I'll say to them, well, I don't think you're depressed, you've probably got low hormones, and that's really the first line of treatment if you're perimenopausal should be HRT instead of going down the route of antidepressants. But obviously it's really difficult because GPs haven't got any time. That's why I'd sort of do my clinic, and I would sort of recommend, maybe it's not all about HRT either, it's because that's not always a silver bullet. It's just maybe their diet and their lifestyle choices, or their movement, or they don't ever stop, their cortisol levels are high. I mean, there's all different things that people sometimes don't realise they're going down a sort of negative
spiral. Yeah.
And it just needs someone just to come and say, actually, this is what you need to just stop a minute and be kind to yourself. You
know? Yeah. I came into this as a menopausal woman, sort of like, well, we need to arm the younger people and the men at work to understand our plight, kind of, not, that's a bit binary, but actually, I hadn't thought about the other part of it, is actually we are not often equipped to ask for what we need as women. So people like you and colleagues like you give women the bullets or whatever it is, you know, the armour they need to go and ask the right questions. But also GPs perhaps need guiding in our own health.
They definitely are getting more guidance, 100%.
Yeah.
More guidance. I went to a brilliant study day the other day, and there were all GPs, and there's only a few nurses there who were brilliant training. So it's definitely happening.
Yeah. So there's a sea change.
Definitely.
Amazing. Well, that's very edifying for you as well, watching that.
Yeah, it's great.
We've talked a lot about the difficult symptoms that we go through that aren't much fun. Mine worst is anxiety, but you know, some people get, I mean, it manifests almost as illness, doesn't it? You know, things are so bad. Are there any sunny uplands to the menopause other than getting to the end of it and no more periods?
Really get to the end of it, because you'll always be post-menopause.
Okay.
And have low estrogen if you don't have any HRT. Definitely you'll get more confident in yourself quite often.
Yeah.
I mean, the anxiety is a big thing. That's what most women experience. Even though people would say, oh, you can't be menopausal because you haven't had a hot flush.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily, a hot flush is just like the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
There's loads of different symptoms that people don't even notice that they've got. So sort of lots of women get maybe diagnosed with fibromyalgia, and actually they're actually might be perimenopausal. And I've had a chat with the pain team about that. They want to do some research about that, whether or not these pains, you know, muscle aches, pains, fatigue, they need some hormones. There's all random symptoms that people don't sort of talk about. It's sort of anxiety of driving is a big thing. Don't want to drive at night. Dry eyes, itchy scalp.
God, it's never ending, this list.
There's loads of it. Brain fog. You know, brain fog's a big thing. Maybe nursing in ITU or coronary care or whatever, and having to do calculations and absolutely can't get their head around it.
Yeah, so
maybe
professional women who perhaps are used to going bing, that's tricky now.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing is it's a natural part of getting older.
Yeah.
It's not just a bridge that we cross over. It's part of the women's experience of aging. And if we look after ourselves and we take the thing, then we can weather it better.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it is, as I say, it's, I think I do focus a lot about nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's so important, because lots of women, I ask them what their diet's like, and they might eat, you know, lots of convenience food. They don't have the motivation. So it is trying to get them to sort of cook from scratch if they can.
So what is the nutritional?
The gold standard is like the Mediterranean diet.
Yeah.
So it's like a diverse range of vegetables, fruits, nuts and seeds, berries, fish, olive oil.
And proportioned correctly.
Yeah.
Or mixed.
Mixed. Yeah. Yeah. So it's having the diversity. Okay. Of different foods, and trying to cut down if you can on sugars, and having good fats, which we're always condemned, but it's like having good fats are really good for you.
they grease your joints, right?
Yeah, extra virgin olive oil, avocados, eat the skin off chicken.
Yeah,
all these things are really important, but it's trying to limit the sugar,
which is
the one that causes the issues and the inflammation. And also the ultra-processed food, which the whole supermarkets are full of.
And again, so, that's a team, not that it, but, you know, that's a, it's tricky for particularly working women who, you know, might work long hours or then have to care as well. And then they've got to cook a whole meal.
Yeah, I do sort of trying to batch cook if they can, you know, do big bowls of, you know, do big chilies and, you know.
Literally doing a chili tonight. I'm feeling very menopause friendly.
It is excellent. So that you're not rushing home and just thinking, I can't be bothered. I'll stick a load of nonsense
in. It's about planning. Quite a lot of it's planning.
Planning a little bit. But then not being too hard on yourself if it doesn't.
Yes.
Right? You know, if you can eat 80% of the time like that and 20% of the time you want to go and get a pizza, go and have a pizza.
Yeah.
Don't deny yourself it.
No. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. So I've talked quite a lot about being at work and maybe being with people who don't really understand it. And perhaps there's no need for it. Really, why would have I wanted to be thinking about the menopause when I was 25? What a miserable way to do it. But now we have these very blended workplaces and people with all ages. And so what do you think, younger people in particular, do you think they should start being aware and learning about it?
Yeah, I mean, they certainly do, and the ones I talk to, and, you know, friends that I know, even know, like my children's
girlfriends. Yeah.
You know, they're happy to talk about it all. You know, they're like 20, 21, whatever. So they're very up with it all.
Amazing.
Brilliant.
So because they'll be,
going forward, I think there won't be an issue at all.
No, okay.
I think it's just slightly our generation.
Yeah, and the ones behind us.
Well,
the ones behind us literally disappeared. At least we're not doing, not literally, but a lot of them, and we're not doing that.
No.
Which is good news. Is menopause taught at school?
It's
going
to be.
Is it?
It's certainly, it's in the curriculum. I think it's through this brilliant charity called Menopause Support.
Folks, we'll find it and I'll put it in the show notes, so don't worry.
She's done the support for med students to get training, you know, to have funding for to be taught in schools as well. So really good.
That's good, because again, the more normalised it is, then the less weird it is when it happens, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Incredible. How do you think we manage our menopausal selves? So when we're in the grip of anxiety, or should we be open about it with colleagues? Should we try and, should we burden them with, you know, it's a difficult one, isn't it?
It's all individual, really.
Yeah.
How you feel and how it suits you. I think some people would happily talk to people. I would definitely advise people to maybe go for some counselling, a bit of CBT, cognitive behavioural therapy, you know, do a little bit of mindfulness, meditation. Again, try and have time to relax and do things that they like doing. It's just because I think life just gets too overwhelming, and then their anxiety
builds
as well, if you've got reducing hormones as well. So it's like a bit of a car crash, really.
Yeah.
So it's trying to try and get a little bit extra bits all the time, like, you know, little baby steps.
And so do you think it's our responsibility as menopause women to make other people feel comfortable about it, or do you think there's a two-way street there? Or I just feel like we're going through it and we've got to make everybody else feel okay at the same time.
Two-way street is, some people won't want to even talk about it, but, you know, that's fine. I think it's just two-way street. I think
it's awareness as well, isn't it, that people just
but it's also promoting the lifestyle choices. I really think that's really important as well. That really does help.
So women need to take charge of their own health.
And without complicating it.
No.
Nothing, that doesn't have to be rocket science.
And to be honest, like, you know, men as well, you know, their bodies shift and change as they get older, and they have to make different choices about what they do as well. It's just, you know, they don't get night sweats.
Yeah.
Or the other things, but so we all are making different decisions as we get older to live the happiest lives that we possibly can.
And to age as well as we can.
Yeah.
I think that's the main thing.
And to be as curious as we possibly can about everybody else's well-being around us, so that we are open and sympathetic towards it.
Curiosity is very good.
I agree. Curiosity is one of my new traits of a dangerous woman. I'm doing an anatomy of the dangerous woman, and curiosity is definitely one of them. But men need, I mean, men are, can be dangerous women too, obviously, because they can be curious as well.
Curiosity is great. Yeah.
To keep and asking why and how and can I help and all those things, I think are...
Absolutely. Not to just be straightforward. Just ask.
Yeah. I mean, I have been in a situation where I've said, you know, I am a woman of a certain age and I'm not feeling great. And those feelings were completely just ignored. So it's difficult. You then don't want to bring it up again. So I think the curiosity part of that will help fix, and the education part will help fix that. Just like, well, ew, you mentioned menopause and I don't want to talk about it.
I don't want to talk about it. Yeah. No, it's a tricky one.
Yeah.
Tricky one. But I think it's also just a bit of empowering of self as well.
Yes.
I think that's an important thing to do.
No, I agree. So I know that there's millions of questions that people have about menopauses, and there's loads of myths that we can bust. Let's start with your top three questions that maybe you get about menopause, and then I might throw a couple in as well.
Okay. So one of the main questions is that HRT causes breast cancer. Unfortunately, there was a study in 2002, I think. It was wrongly reported, but it went out to press way too early, and everyone, therefore, it said, it gives you breast cancer, HRT. But actually, the thing is, if you're just having estrogen on its own, the risk of having breast cancer is really, really minimal. If you have progesterone, it can be a tiny bit increased. But also, if someone has an unhealthy diet or drinks two glasses of wine a day,
or lives in a city with lots of open exhausts,
there's always going to be risk. So you've got to find if the benefits outweigh the risks, really, to how you're feeling and how what your symptoms are like and how you're coping with life, really. So HRT causes weight gain. Menopause can cause weight gain by just your sort of metabolism slows down a bit. When you start taking HRT, you might find you get a bit bloated to start with, but that should all sort of hopefully reduce a bit. But it's fine. You can get a bit more overweight when you're aging. And actually, you need to be a little bit more overweight in order to produce more hormones themselves keep healthy.
So our body shapes, it's less overweight than body shape changing.
Yeah. Another one is that you can't start taking HRT if you're having regular periods, which again is not true. Lots of women start HRT when they're having regular periods, but they've got symptoms. And certainly if you're younger than 40, that's really important to start HRT for your long-term sort of health and bone protection, prevention of heart disease, you know. So you can still have periods and start taking HRT.
My one is still, you know, I think walking into a GP still feels really intimidating and that you're wasting their time.
Yeah, I think now there should be a GP, there should be a sort of menopause doctor, GP in the practice you can always ask for.
Okay.
And it doesn't necessarily, lots of women would say to me, oh, it's okay because my GP's female. It doesn't necessarily mean, you know, males, they have got more training now to know about it. And if not, just say, well, thank you for that. I'll go and see another GP in the surgery. You know, if you're getting absolutely no, you can't take that, here are some antidepressants, then maybe if you know that it's not you wanting antidepressants, it is your hormones. I always say to women, you're the ones having to live in your body 24 hours a day. The GP has 10 minutes with you. Go into the appointment with maybe a checklist that you can download for menopause support or the Balance app, just to say what you're experiencing, and please can I try some HRT. Sometimes, you know, you decide it doesn't work for them, but it takes, and sometimes it can take a little bit of time just to get the right HRT.
It's the same with any medical intervention though, isn't it?
Yeah, bit trial and error, but absolutely, there's only a few reasons that GPs can't prescribe it if you've had breast cancer. I think then you should be referred to a specialist if there's anything more complicated.
And tell me about your clinic. So it's called Second Spring. And why did you start it up?
I decided I wanted to do a private clinic. So I'd already done my prescribing course so that I could therefore prescribe as well.
So but did you see a need that just women weren't getting the advice that they needed?
I just thought I'd give it a go. I just thought, well, I've...
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
So,
what's that? Let it go. Let's just do it. Is that?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. And if it doesn't work, well, at least give it a go. Got to do a bit more work on it and get more people in. But it's good. So it's based in a clinic that does osteopathy and sports massage and things.
Slightly like alternative.
Cool. And it's really good. So I only do one day a week there. I've done some work for the Met Office in Exeter.
Oh, what have you done with them?
I've just done a talk with them.
Men and women?
Mainly women.
But, well... obviously, too. But yeah, that's the next stage, isn't it?
Yeah.
Men for menopause.
They're very much into promoting the menopause. They're brilliant, actually.
Yeah, so. I mean, well, it's a huge employer. We're based in Devon, where we are, and it's on our doorstep. So, and it's a big, big, really progressive employer around here. Yeah, so it's really good to hear that they're doing that. Yeah.
She actually lives in our village, and she's very, she's very supportive of the whole menopause thing. So that's
brilliant.
Great. And maybe do some work for the university as well. So, you know, there's different things
that you can do through the clinic.
Yeah, just
through Second Spring.
Yeah, through Second Spring.
I always ask everybody who inspires them. So if three people that have inspired you, they can be, they don't even have to be people. They could be fictional characters. They could be men, women.
I think my first one would be my uncle, actually. My uncle Norman, who was older than my mum, but he's a vascular surgeon. And he very much supported me doing my nurse training and is always there to sort of be my sort of
cheerleader.
So he was definitely
yay Uncle Norm.
Uncle Norm, lovely.
I'm sure he wasn't Uncle Norm.
I think the second one is Liz Earle, actually.
Oh wow,
love Liz Earle. She's amazing. And all the way through when she's doing her makeup when I was much younger, you know, and now she does her health and well-being, and she's got really good advice and does brilliant podcasts. Really, really good stuff. She does that.
Yeah, she was one of the first people to do skincare for people with eczema and skin conditions.
She doesn't do that anymore.
But she sort of broke into the market.
Broke into sort of well-being. But she's brilliant. Along with Rangan Chatterjee as well, who again is a GP who specialises in all different sort of lifestyle medicine.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all about sort of taking medicine. It's about how you eat, how you move, how you feel and all
Amazing.
That. So that's really good. And I think just sort of my girl mates, actually.
Do you know, I think you're about the fifth person to say my girl mates. It's another trait of a dangerous woman is to have very tightly long-held friendships.
Yeah, because there's loads of them. You know, you'd call it like the sisterhood, but they're not all necessarily women, actually, to be fair.
No, they're not, because I know most of them. So we're cheating. We're very good friends. I hope I'm in the girl mate gang.
Yeah, you certainly are.
Yeah. But yes, I think having a really powerful network, we all know lots of people, but that tight-knit, long-held friendships, as I've said, I think is a real... I don't think there's a single dangerous woman who hasn't gone, oh, and those are the people I met at the start of career who's still my best friends and giving me advice now, or whatever it is. And it just seems... I'm sure it's most women, but it just definitely is a trait of dangerous ones. So, brilliant.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Tell us how people can find out about you. So, I don't think you're on LinkedIn, are you?
That's one of my jobs.
She's coming onto LinkedIn, everybody, but she does have a website. So...
Yeah, so it's called Second Spring Clinic. It's based at Magdalene Health
in Exeter.
In Exeter. That's
best way to learn about you and what you do and what the clinic does.
And I will get onto LinkedIn.
LinkedIn. And I think for me, what I've learned today is that 360 education and understanding is what is really crucial. And it's not just about going slap a patch on. That is definitely part of it. But it's about men, you know, our colleagues, men, women, younger, older, understanding, us understanding ourselves and opening up at least the ability to talk about it more openly in the same way that perhaps mental health is probably the best analogy I can give. I'm not saying stand in the middle of office and go, well, I'm anxious, but, you know, to have somebody that you can talk to or at least know it's understood is the next big step. So,
I
want you to be talking at more metal offices, please.
Yeah. Also really important for women to be kind to themselves, because they can be brutal on themselves, really really negatively brutal. Get more kindness and positivity. I am enough, you know.
Ooh, yes,
you know,
it's quite difficult to think I am enough, isn't it?
Yeah,
but because I think women are conditioned from a young age, or girls are conditioned, that they have to be pretty and perfect and quiet, and it's definitely shifting. But that has been part of just even baked into education. You know, the boys go off and run around and the girls do crafts. And that's all shifting. But it's just, and we need to learn that we're never too much and we are enough. A huge thanks to Fiona Pryor-Palmer for joining us today to discuss all things M-word related, or at least a lot of them. What are my takeaways? I think openness and baking in openness from a really early age, getting it in at the education stage is really important, or at the school stage is really important. Also being curious about what makes each other tick, whether we're young, old, menopausal or not, is really important. Self-care. I think, as Fiona said so eloquently, we can be really tough on ourselves as women, and giving ourselves permission to recognise that maybe we're being affected by symptoms and doing something about them and taking the time that we need is really important. I think those women who can share, if we could ask you to share and start to make it a more common topic, that would be great. But I fully respect those people who don't want to do that. It's not for everybody. And last but not least, we're not done. because of the M word. In many ways, we're just getting going. Many women on this podcast that I've spoken to exemplify that brilliantly. So just deal with the symptoms as best we can and get on with it. And I think Fee spoke about that so, so well. There's so many myths to be bust and so many actions that we can take. So that was our M word special. Thank you so much for listening as always. If you like what you heard, please share, like, respond, and even subscribe. We love that you listen. It means so much to us. And till the next time.